This Tuesday, April 23rd, NBA Playoffs Betting Picks edition of the NBA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100x in NBA, MLB, MMA, NHL, golf, and more. Sign up today at UnderdogFantasy.com using our promo code NBASGPN to get a 100% deposit match. Welcome, everyone, to the NBA Gambling Podcast, part of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. It's Tuesday, April the 23rd, here to get into the three-game schedule on the Tuesday night card for the NBA playoffs, and we'll recap an incredible night on Monday night. Well, at least two out of the three games were incredible, the national televised games. I will recap those, and then, like I mentioned, get into the three games here for tonight. And joining me here to help me break it all down, you guys know that's the voice of the Tennis Gambling Podcast, WNBA, MLB, and of course here on the NBA Gambling Podcast, it's Scott Studio Rochelle. Scott, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
Yeah, doing pretty well. The home team's won again, so I believe they're 11-0 now. Two of the games were really good, involved thrilling comebacks, and you said one of the games was not. I had the under, so that was probably my favorite game. So I can't complain there about whatever type of basketball they were playing over there in Cleveland. But yeah, I know we're going to recap the games in a second, but overall, a very solid night of NBA.
Yeah, two of those games come from behind victories, and we'll start with the first one. We'll quickly go through the Cavs and the Magic. And if you like watching your eyes bleed and putting yourself through some pain, and watching some bad offense, but if you had the under, you would love it like Scott did as his lock. That was the game for you. Orlando just looked so bad on the offensive side. I tweeted out, I was like, I'm not sure they're going to crack 90 or 95 points in this entire series. Maybe that changes for them when they get back home. But the Cleveland Cavaliers put up 30 points in that first quarter, and that was pretty much everything that they needed in that first quarter, and rest of the way, they pretty much just coasted. Second half, they only scored 38 points, but when you score 58 points in the first quarter, the first half, did the Cleveland Cavaliers. That almost seemed that it was going to be good enough for them. Paolo Pancaro last night, 41 minutes, 9 of 20 from the floor. He had 21 points. Franz Wagner, a terrible shooting night, 5 of 17 from the floor. He did finish the game with 18 points. That was pretty much it. They shot 36% from the field, 25% from the three-point land, and the Cavs just did enough to get the victory, to take a 2-0 lead heading back to Orlando for games 3 and 4. They did miss 10 free throws last night, did the Cavs, but again, it really didn't matter. 12 of 39 from the floor. Donovan Mitchell, not a great night from three-point land, 2 of 10. Darius Garland had a pretty good three-point shooting night. He was 4 of 7. But Jared Allen, again, another dominant performance on the boards. 16 points, and he finished up with 20 rebounds. 9 offensive rebounds for Jared Allen. Evan Mobley chipped in with 17 points as well. And another good win for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And just Orlando is just struggling right now offensively here, Scott.
Orlando is a team that needs a lot of shooting. They need a lot of help. Now, they were still able to get a good seed in general, at least compared to what their preseason expectations were. They won the division, so props them there.
Yeah.
You knew early on in the season the offense wasn't great. Their defense was incredible, but you thought that they would maybe make a move at the deadline. They really didn't do anything. So you're going down the line looking at the overall roster. I know Banchero is a young player. He has not been around that long. I don't think he's a number one on an actual, like, successful playoff team because his decision-making is really not that great. He had 6 turnovers again last night. I feel like when he has the ball in his hands all the time, the quality of your offensive sets are always going to be inconsistent. Let's put it that way. Now, we have seen teams lose the first two games on the road. They come back home. They look a lot better. Orlando's been a much better home team than road team this season. I'm not officially going to say the series is totally over. It might be, but who knows? But just watching Orlando play, Franz has forgotten how to shoot. His three-point numbers have been terrible all year. Banchero's turnovers were set, I think, at 4.5 yesterday, and he had 6 after having 9 in game 1. It really just feels like Orlando does not have any actual, I'd say, offensive creators on the entire team. And when they do, Banchero is an out-of-control overall shot creator. It just feels like nobody really has the ability to generate quality offensive sets on a regular basis. And when you're against Cleveland, who has a lot of defensive talent, when you have Mobley and Allen who are patrolling the middle, and even you throw in a couple of other guys on the roster who are pretty solid perimeter defenders, like Okoro, for example, you're just looking at this roster and realizing they really don't have anybody that can generate a good look on a regular basis. And that's the problem they run into. Now, you might disagree with me about Banchero. Maybe if they had more shooting and the spacing was better, that would potentially, you know, make Banchero look better. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I think you'd agree for a young player that's viewed as being a potential face of a franchise, I don't think Banchero is good enough. And I think the big reason for that is I just don't trust his decision-making offensively. It feels like he is extremely, let's just say, erratic with his decision-making. And when that's going to happen with your best player, you're going to have a hard time generating great offense for 4 quarters if your best player is very, let's say, inconsistent with his overall performance offensively against good defenses. You agree with that?
I think so. Has a lot of developing to do. I mean, it's only his second year.
Long way to go, you know, but I'm pointing it out. Long way to go, but yeah. The flaws with his game are extremely noticeable.
Yeah. So I think that's something that, you know, with the proper coaching, that he can definitely get better. And again, this was the first playoff series for most of these young guys on this roster, you know, like the Wagner brothers and like Paolo Banchero. So it's going to be a big learning curve for them and learning experience for them and just getting that playoff experience. But they are going to have to make some decisions on the roster and get guys in, or maybe some veteran guys that can run the offense, get, you know, for example, like a Mike Conley. I'm not saying exact like Mike, like a veteran point guard that can get the offense going. And that way they can have success. And they also need to add 3-point shooting. I think that was a downfall of the Cleveland Cavaliers last year. And they did add that, you know, this offseason. We're not sure how far they're going to get. It's probably going to be a second round exit for the Cleveland Cavaliers if they're able to get past Orlando here. But I think this series is kind of going as I expect initially when I, you know, was handicapping this series, that Orlando would struggle on offense, and the issues that Cleveland had during the regular season, were they going to be able to get past that as far as team chemistry and the inconsistency, some of those guys to get past this Orlando team? And right now they look like they're pretty much in cruise control right now, are the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's get to the 2 more exciting games here quickly, Scott. The New York Knicks, they pull a victory. I don't want to say out of their ass, but
a miraculous victory. Let's put
You go. That was a game that you probably wanted to be at Madison Square Garden. The Stars were definitely out for that game for sure. But let's just fast forward to that final 30 seconds there. Knicks are down by 5 points. Jalen Brunson, who's been absolutely atrocious shooting-wise, in the first 2 games of the series, which I think is really bad news for the Sixers, gets the 3-pointer, bounces, and he gets the 2 shooter's touch there, cuts it to 2 points. For whatever reason, I don't understand why they didn't call a timeout at that point, and then Kyle Lowry, for whatever reason, just did a Kyle Lowry thing and just try to quickly inbounds the ball to Maxey. Maxey wasn't able to get a complete possession. You can argue that maybe he was grabbed. There's always videos out there surfacing. But nonetheless, turnover, a missed 3-pointer. Isaiah Hartenstein literally won this game for the Knicks last night. He gets the offensive rebound, kicks it out. Dante DiVincenzo hits the 3 to get them up by 1 point. And then the next possession, Tyrese Maxey goes down to goes flying down the court, gets to the basket to only be erased by Isaiah Hartenstein. And that was pretty much all it took for the Knicks in that final 30 seconds. But an incredible comeback. We'll start here with the starters again. All 5 starters in double figures last night for the New York Knicks. Not much from the bench. I mean, we already knew that with Tom Thibodeau, because we knew that he was going to play all of his starters a minimum of 38 to 48 minutes, like Josh Hart did last night. playing all 48 minutes for the New York Knicks. He finished the game with 21 points. Did get me to cash my dog of the night. At least that pick came through for me. He had 15 rebounds there, Scott. 24 for Brunson, but he's been not so good in the first two games shooting-wise, combined 16 of 55. Isaiah Hartenstein, again, made some incredible plays down the stretch. He had 14 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 blocks. OG Anunoby chipped in with 10 points as well, but of course we know more defensively. And then Dante DiVincenzo, the huge three-pointer to give the Knicks the win and the lead in that final couple seconds there. He had 19 points, 4 of 8 from three-point land, and that was pretty much it for the Knicks. We can talk about the Sixers here in a second, but just an incredible game for the New York Knicks and how they were able to come back there, Scott.
Yeah, it's a great win. Brunson, as bad as he was, did have that friendly role on the three-pointer to set up the inbound pass, so at least he made the biggest shot of his night by forcing the Sixers to actually inbound the ball and by cutting it to a one-possession game. So Brunson was horrible for the first two games. But there's two ways to look at it. One, Brunson can't be that bad again, and we're 2-0. And the other way to look at it is, I think it's just a confidence booster, because the Knicks invented ways to win games when their best player was abysmal for about two games. So Knicks' confidence should be solid, no matter how ugly it was. You won both home games. You did exactly what you were supposed to do. Now, I got to pivot to Philly. Yes, there was controversy with the timeout. We'll get into that in a second. Mm-hmm. For Philly, the reason why I picked the Knicks to win comfortably last night, and I was wrong in that aspect, with Maxey battling the illness and with Embiid being injured, I just think Philly's supporting cast isn't very good. And that was my main argument going into game two. And then you're looking at the actual box score for players not named Maxey and Embiid, and everybody sucked last night, which is what I kind of thought was going to happen. The problem was I didn't expect Maxey and Embiid to look completely healthy and to combine for 69 points. But you're looking at the rest of the team. Tobias Harris led all other scores with 10. Lowry at 8. Oubre at 4. Batum at 6. Reed at 2. And Hield at 2. So nobody on Philly supporting cast did anything. And Harris had 10 points on 11 shots. We know to play off Tobias Harris is abysmal, so we are aware that's a thing. But I have to at least point it out. That was the main reason why I was picking the Knicks in that game, was one, based on the injuries to Maxey and to Embiid. Two, I just thought the Knicks had more depth. I just thought the Knicks had more guys that can give you quality minutes. And that part I got right, because that was a big reason why the Knicks won. McBride wasn't as good as he was in game one. He still gave you about 9 points off the bench. Bogdanovich wasn't great, but at least he gave you some three-point shooting for spacing purposes. He was okay in 12 minutes. But the Knicks were willing to actually use all their starters for a ton of minutes, and the Sixers tried to do that, I mean, with the exception of Oubre, who played 26 minutes. But it just felt like the Sixers bench, or the Sixers supporting cast, really no-showed the game, and it was just Maxey and Embiid versus the entire Knicks roster. And if that's going to happen, you're going to have a hard time winning on the road. Yeah. I have to give Maxey props. He was one rebound away from a triple-double. He was incredible. Whatever I've heard about the illness was just a lie, because he played great. Embiid wasn't efficient. He had 34 points. I mean, you mentioned the three-pointers for Embiid. He took 9 of them, so he's clearly injured because he can't move. But he had 34 points. Like, he played well. Maxey played well, all things being considered. And your team still lost. You can make the argument that Philly should be encouraged because they hung in there and they proved that they can win a game in MSG, or discouraged because now you have to win 4 out of 5 games, which is very difficult to do against a two seed in any conference. I'm going to lean more to option B. I think it hurts Philly a lot. Because you also have to remember that Embiid is still banged up, and you kind of needed one of those two games, because I'm not sure if Embiid's body is going to last to 7. Like, I'm not sure his body is going to hold up to get you to a game 7. So, yeah, we'll talk about the actual controversy with the game in a second, but good win for the Knicks. I mean, it was not how you draw it up, but you don't really care how you draw it up. A win's a win.
Yeah, I mean, especially this time of year where you get that victory, you're looking like for what, 97% of the game that you were going to lose this game, and, you know, for them to come back. I guess the I guess the good news for Embiid would be is that they only have two games in the next, 5 days. So they have 2 days off between the next game, which is on Thursday. And then they have two days off because the next fourth game four would not be till Sunday, the first game of the afternoon in Philly. So I think it's like you mentioned, it's going to be a tough sledding now for the New York Knicks to win 4 of the 5 games here against the New York Knicks. And Knicks defense travels. And I think that's the thing that we've heard, in any sport. And I think for the New York Knicks, that only Jalen Brunson is the only direction he can go, at least offensively, is up. So I think that's bad news for the Philadelphia 76ers. Typically, I do expect role players to play better at home. We'll see if that transpires for the New York Knicks here. But again, like you mentioned, 69 points between Maxey and Joel Embiid. Somebody else has to step game. Up.
Like,
you had to win last night. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. You have to win that game. Now, Embiid's been fatigued. I get all that. But, I mean, you're looking at the actual stats. Embiid had an and-one in the last 421, and he didn't make a shot after that.
Yeah.
That can't happen.
Yep. My whole thing was about Nick Nurse not calling a timeout.
That was the controversy, because he either did not call it or he did and it wasn't called. That's kind of the controversy. Yep.
So from stuff that I saw, I think that number one, they should have called the timeout after the three-pointer that that Jalen Brunson made to kind of reset there and get the ball at least inbounds. And unfortunately, that was what led to DiVincenzo hitting that go-ahead three-pointer in the final seconds there for the New York Knicks. You could argue that there was maybe a foul. There was a grab by Brunson on Maxey. I mean, I saw the video. I thought there was a foul, but
I think it was on Hart, but same point.
Yeah. But I think in that moment where there's just so much going on, I'm not sure that the referees would catch it at that point. But once they did get the ball inbounds, it was very, very difficult at that point to call a timeout for Nick Nurse, because Maxey really didn't have possession of the ball. And again, in that situation, especially in a game that you need a win, I would have called the timeout there after Jalen Brunson hit that three-pointer with about 27 seconds left, and then, reset my team. At that point, you're still up by 2 points, right? At that point, it turns into a free throw contest there, because you have pretty good free throw shooters on your team, whether it's Embiid, whether it's Maxey, whether it's even Kyle Lowry, that can knock down some clutch free throws for you. So that would be my only critique about what happened down the stretch for the Sixers. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. First of all, I think Hart did foul him. I thought he clearly grabbed Maxey. Like, just full. Besides the timeout, it was a foul. Now, we've seen the refs let things go. We saw the entire Heat Sixers game, with the exception of one off the ball foul call. You had guys grabbing each other the entire game, and they weren't going to call anything. So you can argue that it's not shocking there was no call there in that situation, but there probably should have been. Maxey got fouled before the inbound pass. For the timeout, Nurse initially had his hands together like he was going to call a timeout.
Pump fake.
Then he changed his mind. He just straight up pump faked it. Then Maxey falls to the floor. There's no foul call. And he starts spamming timeout after Hart's already having possession of the ball, trying to rip it away from Maxey. So it looked like Nurse was positioned to call a timeout before the inbound. Then you said Lowry went quickly. I don't know if Lowry was not supposed to inbound it at all, and maybe he was supposed to just get a quick look and see if anything was open, and then Lowry went for it. But Nurse was ready to call a timeout before the inbound pass. He never actually did it.
Yeah.
And then he waited, and then you saw that he was like trying to signal, but then he pulled back at the end.
Yeah.
And then he went for it after Maxey lost possession already. So I don't really feel bad about what happened, because there was no consistency with what Nurse was doing. Nurse was initially going to call a timeout, then he changed his mind, and then he ended up deciding, I got to call a timeout now. Now, there are some rumors. I actually didn't see if Embiid called timeout or any of the other players did. I know Batum tried to at the bottom of the screen, I think after the ball was already loose. So I didn't get a good look at that. The only thing I saw was Nurse. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised the refs did not give Nurse a timeout. Mm-hmm. I don't know when Embiid and other guys were signaling, so I can't give you an answer on that. I'll have to rewatch it. But for Nurse, he like half committed to calling a timeout and then wanted to actually get the timeout when it was too late. So I don't feel bad for what happened to Nurse. I have to see what happened again with Embiid and Batum on the court trying to call timeout.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those situations that in a playoff game that you need a reset. And, I mean, I would immediately call a timeout if I was Nick Nurse. But nonetheless,
you'd advance to the half court anyway. I would call timeout.
Yeah. Nonetheless, Knicks take a 2-0 lead. The series heads back to Philadelphia starting on Thursday for Game 3. Scott, before we get over to the Lakers and the Denver Nuggets game from Game 2, let me tell everyone about the NFL Draft. It's this week. It's in fact on Thursday, and the Sports Gambling Podcast has you covered all week with NFL draft props, mock drafts, and their NFL draft watch party. Tune in Thursday night on Sports Gambling Podcast YouTube page and hang out with the guys for the best NFL watch party out there. And also, we are also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy, friends over at Underdog Fantasy. The NBA playoffs are officially here, and our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy, wants to make it a lot more interesting. Underdog is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Play their pick'em game as simple as selecting higher or lower on player stats like points, rebounds, assists, and so much more. Make entries of all basketball or mix and match across your other favorite sports, and you can win 100 times your money, and it's a ton of fun. Underdog is available in 30-plus states, including California, Texas, and even Canada. New customers get a pick-up special in the lobby when they sign up. Underdog is running a ton of different promos, bonus cash airdrops, specials, giveaways, and much more throughout the NBA playoffs. So make sure to follow at Underdog Picks on Twitter to keep an eye out. Underdog is available in 30-plus states, like I mentioned, including California, Texas, Canada. Now they have officially launched Champions, their player versus player format in Florida. Make sure you guys sign up with our code NBASGPN. Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you use that promo code NBASGPN. All right, Scott, the third and final game of the night. Another game where a team in the Lakers got out to another great start, as I thought they would. And as soon as I saw the halftime score, I said Denver's coming back because Denver is one of those teams that can just flip a switch. And they did that mostly in that fourth quarter. Give props to D'Angelo Russell, number one, for the way he bounced back in this game, shooting-wise, after going, one of nine from three-point land in game one. It was really that first three-pointer is everything that you really need to know that if D'Lo was going to have a great night or not. He hit that first one. Lakers had a commanding lead at the half. Defensively, they were very good as well. I believe they had 59-44 advantage at the half. And then again, the third quarter gave them trouble. They got outscored 25-20. Fourth quarter was the story of this game, 32-20. And the Lakers get outscored in the second half, 57-40, a plus 17 advantage for the Denver Nuggets in that second half. Fourth quarter, let's fast forward it. Some incredible shot making both by the Lakers. D'Lo had a clutch shot there. LeBron had a clutch shot there to get the rebound. Unfortunately, LeBron was wide open. I don't think there was a defender within maybe 10 to 12, maybe even 15 feet for that three-pointer. Missed it. And give a lot of props to Mike Malone for not calling a timeout. I know I just mentioned that the Nick Nurse situation was different. But at that point, Denver had all the momentum. Give them props because, again, they were, I don't want to say playing with house money, but it was either that we're going to go see a game winner like we saw, or we were going to go to overtime. Jamal Murray, Kawhi Leonard-esque, gets that right side of the floor, knocks down the three-pointer. It wasn't as dramatic as Kawhi Leonard's where it bounced and then it went in, but just over Anthony Davis. I mean, if you saw some of the photos that were taken of that shot, it was absolutely incredible. But Lakers cover the game. Unfortunately, I think they're done, man. It's just they have been in these games in the first two games, and they just haven't been able to close it out, especially in the second half. This could be easily 1-1 heading back to LA, but the Denver Nuggets, again, championship pedigree, coming out in that second half and just taking it to the Lakers both defensively and offensively. I'll quickly go through the numbers here, but Nikola Jokic finished up with a triple-double like we talked about, 27 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists for Nikola Jokic. Michael Porter Jr. pitched in with 22 points, 6 of 10 from three-point land. Jamal Murray, like we mentioned, had the huge clutch game-winning shot there for the Denver Nuggets. Not very efficient from the floor, but he made the shot that mattered. 9 of 24 from the floor, 0 of 5 from three-point land. For the Lakers, Anthony Davis, 32 points, 11 rebounds. LeBron James, 26 points, 8 rebounds, 12 assists. And D'Angelo Russell bounced back, 8 of 16, 7 of 11 from the three-point line. But nothing else outside of those three guys for the LA Lakers. The other three guys, Taurean Prince, Austin Reaves, and Rui Hachimura combined for 18 points. And the guys coming off the bench and Spencer Dinwiddie, Gabe Vincent in 10 and 15 minutes and contributed absolutely nothing for this Lakers team. So 2-0 for the Denver Nuggets. Tall task here. Impossible task, I think, for the Lakers, who have now lost their 10 straight games against the Denver Nuggets and now expecting them to win 4 of the 5 next games. I think they can say 1-2-3 Cancun here, Scott.
I'm not going to say that they're going to get swept. I'm not going to go that far. I'm not picking them to win the series, but I do think Denver is probably going to win in 5, if I had to guess. But
I'd give them 1 at home.
Yeah, I think the way I got it to start off with this, I'll save the referee complaining for the end. I'll talk about the actual game. So AD was great again. He had 32 and 11.
Yep.
Plus minus of 0, which I find kind of interesting, but he was great. He had 32 points, 11 rebounds. LeBron was great. He had 26, 8, and 12. He had the massive steal and dunk right at the end, and then he missed the three-pointer, so nobody cares. I feel like that's kind of how it goes. You miss one big shot, and everyone forgets everything else you did. LeBron was amazing for about 47 minutes.
Yeah,
and you're looking at the rest of the team. D'Lo was great yesterday. Props to him. He had 23 points. He was great. And it didn't matter, because you had three guys who scored in double digits. Three on the entire team. Rui sucked. He was 1 for 7. Reaves wasn't good. He hasn't been good the first two games of the series. And the same thing as game one. They had one guy who scored off the bench. Taurean Prince. One guy. That's it. And you're playing Dinwiddie like 10 minutes. He can't play. He actually belongs in China. He can't play. He's not an NBA player. You're looking at Gabe Vincent, who has been really underwhelming since the Lakers signed him. Kendrick Nunn 2.0 potentially, but he's been a mess too. It just feels like the Lakers had a great opportunity slipped through their fingertips because they were up 20, and they can't beat this team. It's just as simple as that. They just can't beat this team. I feel like we've seen every possible script imaginable. Lakers great start, Lakers bad start, Lakers up by a lot in the second half, close game second half, doesn't matter. The Nuggets win. It just feels like the Lakers, no matter what the script is for the first 36 minutes, for the first like 30 minutes. It doesn't matter because Denver just gets better shots down the stretch. They find to win. Just feels like the Lakers can't get over the hump. And I don't know how they're going to do it because AD gave you the two best possible games he could have played and you squandered them. It's just what happened. If AD doesn't play like that, you lose by 20. I know that officiating was a story for the game. I'll get into that in a second. But AD and LeBron gave you phenomenal performances last night and you wasted it. Like, I don't know how you could have had a better start to a road game in a playoff spot to even up a series. You're up 20. You're up 15 basically halfway through the quarter. You're up double digits entering the fourth. And you lose the game? Like, I don't know what else there is to say. The Nuggets just find ways to really never blink in bad situations, and they find ways to just win all these playoff games because of the great shot selection they get down the stretch. Now, Murray was phenomenal down the stretch. It was fair. He was terrible for three quarters, so that's why his numbers look so bad. Joker puts up 27, 20, and 10. I've given my thoughts on Joker before. I've mentioned it. I know that I missed the entire, basically, Jordan prime. LeBron's the best player of my generation or lifetime. I think Joker's too. I know I'm going to insult some people who really love Kobe and really love Shaq and love all these guys. I'm taking Joker too. It just is what it is. I don't know what more I need to see from the guy. He's one of the best players I've ever seen play the sport. And you're looking at what the Lakers did down the stretch. I don't know what they did down the stretch. LeBron carried and made a couple of big plays, but Darvin Ham's rotations are atrocious. The offensive sets are disgusting half the time down the stretch. What is it? What else is there to say? The Lakers just can't beat this team.
Yeah. Like, I mean, look, when you have a 20-point lead in a playoff game, and you lose the way you lose, I think it's very, very difficult to Now you can look at it two ways. Like Lakers, like, all right, we've been in these two games. We should have at least won one of these games, probably the second game of the series. And you're like, all right, let's get back home. Our role players hopefully step up at that point, and then, you know, we could get one game, and then, you know, we'll see what happens in the rest of the way. Or you look at it, we left it all out there in the first two games. We had a 20-point lead, and it's a soul-crushing, dream-crushing that you lose the game like that to the Denver Nuggets by coughing up that lead number one
and losing. Against a team that owns you.
Exactly. And now this team has won their last 10 games in a row against you. Like, how do you crack the code if there is one to crack against this team? And I'm not sure that – I think Lakers get one at home, but again, this series is going to be very, very difficult for the Lakers to not only win one game, but even come back in the series and beat this Denver Nuggets team. So, I mean, I again, for the Lakers, you played great defense. Your two guys in LeBron and AD played well. D'Lo came back and responded very well, but you got nothing from anybody else. I think it'll be interesting to see if they come out again in that first half and play the way they did in the first two halves. I'm going to go and bet Denver in the second half again, because again, we've seen in the first two games that the Denver Nuggets have pretty much played championship basketball in that second half, and they don't give up. You can't count this team out ever. And we saw that last night when they were trailing by 20. Like, they didn't panic, like you mentioned, and they just chipped away in the second half and eventually got the victory on the final possession of the game. So give them a lot of credit for the Denver Nuggets. They could have easily been like, all right, you know, we're folding up a little bit here. They got us game one, but, you know, we beat this team 9 of the last 10 times, and we'll head to L.A. because, again, we went into L.A. last year, beat them both in those games, and we went to the NBA Finals and won the championship eventually. But, no, they said, hey, this is still a game. Let's put our foot down and get this victory. And they did. So 2-0. Now they're going to be heading back to LA. I think there's another series that has 2 days off in between. I think every series does when they, you know, traveling from one city to the other. So I think this game is going to be on Thursday night, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So let's see if Lakers can respond here, maybe get a victory in this series. But again, this is going to be very, very difficult now for the Lakers after now trailing 0-2 against the defending NBA champion. Scott, anything else?
The only thing I'll add there is that they complain about the officiating. Denver actually attempted more free throws than the Lakers for once. Congratulations. That has not happened in a long time for Denver. Nobody feels bad for you when you outshoot the entire league in free throws by a mile for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to feel bad for you. You've attempted more free throws than any other team in the league for the last 2 years by a ton. Nobody cares if you had one game where the referees did not give you every call. Were there some missed calls? Yes. I thought the slap down on the D'Lo drive was definitely a weird overturn there. Mm-hmm. But nobody feels bad for you. You've gotten every call for the entire year. Like, nobody cares. Yep. Like, at the end of the day, you got to win games. You're up 20 on the road. Don't blame officials when you blow a 20-point lead.
Yep. All right, Scott, before we get into the three games here for tonight, let me tell everyone about our friends over at AG1. Hey, there's mornings where you feel sluggish. You know, maybe your stress levels are elevated and you're not going to be as focused, to start the day. And that's where AG1 comes in. And when I started drinking AG1 daily, I could feel a little real difference in my daily health. I also had a lot more energy. I also noticed I was feeling a little bit more relaxed. I could focus a lot more because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. And not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love every scoop that includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune health. I recommend AG1 to all my friends and family because AG1 has a team of doctors and scientists that formulate on the latest science and maintains high quality standards. I even got my dad started on drinking AG1, and he always tells me that he has a lot more energy, that his gut health feels a lot better, that his stress levels are manageable as well. And if you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 for free. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/SGPN. That's drinkag1.com/SGPN. Make sure you guys check it out. And last but not least, we're also brought to you by the Football Contest Proxy. Thinking of entering the Circa Millions and Circa Survivor contest this upcoming football season, but you don't live in Nevada? No problem. It's very easy to hire a proxy to submit the picks for you each week for your chance to win millions. Sign up in Las Vegas and then submit your picks to your proxy. We've partnered up with the gold standard of proxies over at footballcontestproxy.com. Plus, if you use the promo code SGP at checkout, you'll save $50 off of the proxy fees. That's right. Just go to footballcontestproxy.com. That's footballcontestproxy.com. And make sure you use that promo code SGP to get 50% off. I've actually used Football Context Proxy for the times I've entered the contest. Tony and Matt are absolutely phenomenal. They do a really good job. So, again, if you're going to enter the contest, make sure to check out my people there, Tony and Matt. They'll take care of you for those contests over at the Circa Millions or the Circa Survivor. All right, Scott, let's get into the games here for tonight on the NBA schedule for the playoffs. Game two tipping off. That's going to be the Phoenix Suns. They are in Minnesota to take on the Timberwolves. Timberwolves have a 1-0 lead. They were absolutely phenomenal in game one, in convincing fashion, won 120-95. But tonight, the spread is -3 in favor of the Minnesota Timberwolves with a total of 211.5. Looking at the injury report for both of these teams, Grayson Allen is officially listed as questionable. He's dealing with a right ankle sprain, and Damian Lee continues to be out for the Phoenix Suns. Kyle Anderson is also questionable for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He has a right hip pointer injury for the Timberwolves there. Game one, we saw what Anthony Edwards was able to do. Kevin Durant had a really good game in game one as well, but not much else from the supporting cast there or his other two stars on his team. But Phoenix looking to even up the series here at one game apiece before heading back to Phoenix here, Scott. Timberwolves -3 here on the spread. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think for this one, it's kind of tough because I picked the Suns to win the series and I had Minnesota to win game one. So I guess I have to lean Phoenix if I'm going to stick with my original prediction. Now, Grayson Allen being questionable is not ideal because he's been a great three-point shooter this entire season. And Minnesota kicked their asses in game one. So maybe that confidence builds because they couldn't beat Phoenix in the regular season and they smacked them, especially in the second half. And maybe that's going to result in potentially some extra confidence. But I'm going to lead to Phoenix in this one. Maybe it's a buy low spot. Maybe you can make the argument that I think Minnesota is still not that great offensively. And I know Ant took over the third quarter. I might just be hoping Booker can't be that bad. Booker was awful. Durant was solid, though. I know Nurkic didn't do much either. Might be an unpopular opinion. I'm sure most people will be on Minnesota because home teams are still undefeated so far. But yeah, home teams are undefeated in the first round, but I'm going to lean Phoenix here. Maybe it's a buy low spot. Maybe I'm just not sold on Minnesota. I've seen them win game ones in a series and lose before. They did it against Memphis a couple of years ago, and they ended up losing that series in six. I'm going to lean to Phoenix. It really comes down to Durant and Booker just trying to carry, but I don't know. Maybe a part of me is still a bit skeptical of Minnesota being able to dominate like they did in the second half against Phoenix. Phoenix kind of no-showed after halftime. I don't know what happened there. You could argue Vogel just had a really bad game plan. Yeah. Who knows? But I feel like if Ant is even remotely underwhelming in this game, I just think Minnesota's got problems. So maybe I'm hoping that Phoenix has a better defensive game plan against Ant the second time around. I'm going to lean Phoenix, though. I think it's a good buy-low spot.
Yeah, I mean, take a look at the box score from game one. Durant had a great night, 11-17, 2-of-2 from three-point land. He finished the game with 31 points. I expect Devin Booker to bounce back here tonight. After usually a bad shooting performance, he does bounce back. He was 5-of-16 in game one for 18 points. Bradley Beal, I'm not sure what I'm going to get out of him. 15 points, 6-of-10 from the floor. Outside of that, the two guys that you need to step up that you know that are going to get minutes, and we're not sure if Grayson Allen plays here tonight or not, is going to be both Grayson Allen and Eric Gordon. Those two guys combined 0-of-8, 0-of-7 from three-point land. That can't happen, especially when this team is already lacking depth on this team. You need those guys to knock down three-point shots for you. I think Grayson Allen should be getting a lot more attempts than three that he got in game one. And again, a lot of that maybe had to do with the ankle injury, and we'll see if he's able to go here tonight or not. But those two guys really need to step up for this Phoenix Suns team. Royce O'Neal had a great game in game one. He was 5-of-10 from the floor, 4-of-8 from three-point line. But like you mentioned, that if Anthony Edwards, if they're able to contain Anthony Edwards, like you mentioned, just a bit in this game, I'm not expecting to kill Alexander Walker to go 4 of 9 from the 3-point line again. Naz Reid may be a little bit better. He was 4 of 10 from the floor, but only played 19 minutes. But outside of that, I think they just really need to either find a way to either double team Anthony Edwards and make somebody else beat you, or you lock down everybody else. Karl Anthony Towns that game had 19 points for them. Rudy Gobert had 14. Shot 50% from the floor. The issue that the Phoenix Suns are going to run into is inside the paint, right? Because again, Yusuf Nurkic being a good defender, but I just don't think that they really have the defensive presence in the paint to keep the Minnesota Timberwolves out of that paint. Because you take a look in game one, Minnesota outscored Phoenix inside the paint 52-34. And that was pretty much the difference there. So I'll lean Phoenix here as well, because like you, I did pick Phoenix here as well to win this series. I think they do bounce back here tonight. I think Devin Booker has a big game. I know we'll talk about player props here in a minute, but I don't expect the supporting cast to have such a good game like they did. And again, Anthony Edwards has been a little bit more inconsistent, you know, having a great shooting night than having a bad shooting. So I think that Frank Vogel, I don't want to say he's an underrated coach, but I do trust him to make those adjustments with the coaching staff that he does have with David Fizdale.
I'm not sure I do trust him to make the adjustment based on what I've seen this year, but I don't know. Part of it might just be based on my pre-series bias. I just thought Phoenix would lose game one. I thought it was a must-win game for Minnesota because they're inexperienced, and I thought they needed to win that game at home.
Yeah,
I do think as a veteran team, I'm expecting a much better effort for the second game. That's kind of my point.
Total 211.5. Any thoughts on the total?
I mean, game one went over, but I find it kind of weird the totals dropped after game one went over. I think I'm going to lean under. If I'm picking Phoenix to win the game, which is, I already know, a bit of a hot take because the home team hasn't lost yet.
Yeah.
If I'm picking Phoenix to win the game, that means I'm basically saying Minnesota's offense is going to struggle in this game. Because Phoenix does not play that fast. They really only have two guys that I actually trust, because Grayson Allen might not play. So we'll see what happens. But I'm going to lean under in this game. Couple ways to get there. I could be dead wrong about my overall winner prediction, and Phoenix no-shows the game offensively again, and Minnesota just does not reach 120, and I win. Or vice versa, Phoenix shows up defensively, you have an absolute grind-it-out just war, and maybe the game ends up landing in the 200s or 190s. So, couple scripts there. I'll link to the under.
Yeah, I feel like this number was a little bit low, but it could be something similar to what we saw between the Lakers and the Denver Nuggets. I felt like that Phoenix team total right now, 104.5, seemed a little low. But again, a lot of it depends on obviously if the supporting cast is able to step up here tonight. But I don't have much for the total here. Maybe if you see it again, something.
The game one went over. Unders have cruised so far in the postseason.
Yeah.
Game one went over, and you drop the total by 3.5 points, by about 3-4 points.
And that's kind of telling that. Yeah. And that's what they're probably thinking in this game, that it's probably one of those grinded out type of games between these two teams. Player props, what are you looking at?
Well, I mean, if I'm going to pick Phoenix, once again, if I'm sticking with the script, I might actually consider Ant under. I might actually do it. I know a lot of people are going to blindly take the over because he was incredible in game one, and he seems to raise his level in the playoffs, but I do think Phoenix will make some defensive adjustments. Ant was great for what exactly in game one? Like a quarter and a half?
I would say the fourth quarter primarily. Third quarter
he carried. I'm saying fourth quarter, give or take. So I think if Phoenix does not let him go nuts for a 12-minute stretch, you could argue his numbers are a bit inflated. Maybe. So I don't mind leaning under on Ant, but once again, it's all correlated. If Phoenix loses this game, I'm going to be dead wrong about everything. I've just kind of accepted that, besides maybe the under. I think Durant's going to have a good game. Durant proved in game one they can't really guard him, so I think Durant's going to be in line for a decent showing. I don't know if Nurkic can do anything in this series, because Gobert completely destroyed him in game one, and I'm wondering if Nurkic even has the ability to really make an impact in the series. He's going to need to, but do I like his unders? I might. I mean, Gobert's patrolling the middle. Nurkic can't really shoot that well from the outside. Does it feel like it's just a bad series matchup for Nurkic, or do you think it's just one bad game?
I think it could be a bad matchup for him. I'm just kind of going back and looking at what he's done against the Timberwolves this season. Defensively, he's filling up the stat sheet. He did have 3 blocks and 2 steals in that game against the Timberwolves in the game one. He had a 15 rebound game back on April 5th. But outside that, it's just really been inconsistent for Yusuf Nurkic. So maybe this is a bounce back game for him. Or if you want to look at his rebounding prop in this game, I would maybe look at that. But he's been pretty good getting steals and blocking shots. So dating back to the regular season, the last 2 games, 3 steals, 1 block, 5 steals, 1 block. And then in game one, he did have 2 steals and 3 blocks. I'm pretty sure that number is probably going to be at 3.5. So if you want to find a way to back him, and if we think this is going to be a lower scoring game and a little bit better defense, I would probably look at defensive stats for Yusuf Nurkic, because right now you get his steals and blocks over 2.5 at plus 140.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I want to go for Naz Reid props in this game. He had the insane, I don't even know what you want to call it. I don't know if it was a Euro step, but he had the insane, reverse spin away, which he, you know, he's part of the Jelly fam for a reason. That was just a filthy finish, especially for a backup center in the league. He's probably the only backup center that can do that. I feel like Reed's in line for a good matchup, because I just think he's significantly better than Eubanks. He had 12 points in game one. You're looking at his overall number. It's 10.5. It is a bit juiced, but I lean under on Reed. He's gone over this number in 3 of 4, gone over in 15 of 20. I think Reed's in line for a good game.
All right. I would play, bet Devin Booker's points over 24.5. I think it comes out and plays well in that first quarter.
If he doesn't, they're going to lose. So he's going to have.
So if you're, you know, one of those first quarter player prop bettors, if you want to look at Devin Booker's points to go over in the first quarter, I think that's worth a look. But other than that, I think that this, that Nurkic one over 2.5 steals and blocks, I really do like that, especially at plus 140. When he's done it pretty fairly easily in the last 3 games head-to-head against the Phoenix Suns, including game one of this series. Anything else for this game?
No, not really. Once again, I'm just going to stick with my original pre-series script. If Phoenix loses, would I be shocked? No. Once again, I don't really like either of these teams over the course of the season. So I'm going to put faith in a veteran team to bounce back. If they don't, series is probably over, but who knows?
All right, next game on the schedule here, we'll go to the Indiana Pacers. They are in Milwaukee to take on the Bucks. Bucks are currently a 1-point favorite in this game with a total of 223.5. Looking at the injury report for the Indiana Pacers, pretty clean. But Nick Mathurin, we know he's already going to be missing time and it's done for the season. And Giannis is officially listed as doubtful for this game with the calf injury. We saw game one, dominating performance by the Milwaukee Bucks, led by Damian Lillard. Convincing win there. They take care of game one on their home floor. I want to say around the same line, depending on what the number you got. I know the Bucks were +1 at the closing number in game one, but now they're favored by a point here, Scott. Expecting Pacers to bounce back, or do you think Bucks take care of business and take a 2-0 lead?
Yeah, I'm going to take Milwaukee in this one. I think this line's short, and I think it's too short. I understand that Indiana was favored in game one. Odds makers made adjustments. Now Milwaukee's technically a favorite, barely, in this game. I feel like there were a couple of concerns that I have to at least bring up from game one. I ended up Benedicting. I picked Milwaukee in game one, and I had the under in a 2-pick parlay, which worked out well. Indiana in the half court kind of sucks. And I feel like not enough people really talk about it, because offensively, according to overall rating, great offensive unit all year long, they really need fast break points. They are terrible in the half court if you watch them play. And a big reason for that is that the actual supporting cast is not that great, because Siakam at 36 points and 13 rebounds, nobody even cares. It was mostly in garbage time, I guess, because Milwaukee was up by, 20 at the half? Game was over because Lillard at 35 in the first half. Siakam was great. Halliburton's done nothing basically since the in-season tournament, and not enough people have called him out on it. I know that people have on Twitter, but if you actually look at the overall numbers in the last couple of months, I know he's battled some injuries here or there, but damn, Halliburton's been terrible. And he only attempted 7 shots. He didn't do anything. in the entire game one. I know he had some rebounds and assists. I think he had like 8 rebounds in there. But the point is, if Haliburton's not a threat to shoot and he never gets to the foul line and he's arguably your best player, you have problems. And I'm not even getting into the overall rest of the lineup where Miles Turner scores 17 points on 17 shots. And it's like, okay, great. Like, I don't know what's that supposed to do for me. I don't think Miles Turner's a good offensive player. You got Obi Toppin off the bench. You're throwing out McDermott. You're throwing out Ben Shepherd. I mean, Nesmith was terrible in game one. Nembhard sucked in game one. What does Indiana have? It's not their fault. Yeah. I know Mathurin got injured as well. He's a big bench piece. If you want to compare him to like the Kings without Malik Monk, like you're missing a massive scoring piece off the bench. I recognize that. I just don't think Indiana's offense is that good, especially if Milwaukee can slow the pace down and force Indiana to execute in the half court. I like Milwaukee. They're a really good home team. I believe they're 33-11 or 32-11 straight up at home this season. They have a very solid overall roster based on depth. Middleton was great in game one. Yeah, can you guys see that, you know, Lillard had no points in the second half. They also just trapped him on every pick and roll and left guys wide open the entire second half. It wasn't like they discovered this phenomenal defensive game plan to shut down the entire Bucks team. They just said, Lillard's not going to beat us, and they had guys wide open. I think AJ Green missed a bunch of wide open threes in the corner in that game. But it felt like Milwaukee was just one step ahead the entire game. Maybe it was an experience for Indiana. Maybe it was Carlisle not getting out of the first round since he won the NBA Finals with Dallas. It just felt like a spot where Indiana, maybe it's not the exact same thing as Orlando with their series against Cleveland, but just watching that game unfold, Indiana just didn't look talented enough. Did you feel the same way? Because I kind of felt that way.
And the reason I do like the Bucks, even without Giannis in this series, at least for the first couple games here, we'll see if, when he comes back, is the depth is just a lot more consistent and better for this Milwaukee Bucks team than the Indiana Pacers. I mean, you rattled off the names there. Yes, Siakam had a great game. Miles Turner was 5 of 17. Hallie only got up 7 shots in that game. Three players in double figures. TJ McConnell is coming off the bench and getting up 13 shots for you in 18 minutes. That's pretty telling of where your talent is right now.
I like McConnell, but 13 shots in 18 minutes is crazy.
Yeah. But you know, then you look at the Bucks side, right? Without Giannis, I mean, we know what Bobby Portis can do in the place of Giannis. We've talked about that a lot, not only during the regular season, but also in the playoffs. Chris Middleton, it was a breath of fresh air. He was very efficient. I mean, when the lights turn on, we've seen Chris Middleton be that second scorer next to Giannis when they won the championship. He had 23 points. Am I expecting Dame to come out and put up another 30 piece? I mean, it's highly possible because again, we've seen him do it with Portland. But again, there's guys that can shoot the ball for this Milwaukee Bucks team consistently. They were 14 of 37 from Portland, 37%. Malik Beasley coming off the bench, Pat Covington, Jay Crowder. So I think the depth is a lot more better for this Milwaukee Bucks team. And I think that's what overmatching right now for this Indiana Pacer team. I mean, even in that third quarter, right, where they did make it interesting, they got outscored 29-14 to the Milwaukee Bucks. It still just wasn't enough because of how dominating they were in the first quarter. And like you mentioned, in the first half. But it's just this Bucks team at home is just a different animal. And we've seen that throughout their playoff run over the past couple seasons, outside of last year, where Miami was hitting every three-point shot. But I trust this Milwaukee Bucks team more at home here as well. So I'm on the Bucks here minus the one until the series does shift back to Indiana for game three. And we'll see at that point if Giannis does come back. But again, Milwaukee's at home. I'm going to back them every single time in the playoffs, especially against an Indiana Pacers team. I want to see what adjustments Rick Carlisle does make, if any. But if you're relying on Pascal Siakam to get up 25 shots and 36 points from you, not getting anything else from anybody else from this team, that's going to be a very, very tough hill to climb, because for this Milwaukee Bucks team, outside of Dame, any of those other guys can get hot from three-point land and contribute. Maybe it could be two guys, and that could just be the difference in this game here. So, yeah, I'm on the Bucks here with you, minus the one. Total 223.5. Any thoughts on that?
I'm going to lean under again. If I'm picking Milwaukee, then they have to slow the pace down. If Indiana runs, they got a shot to win this game. Milwaukee should go out of their way. And that's adjustment I want to
see if they make, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Indiana has to do. I think you'd agree with me. We saw it in the in-season tournament final against the Lakers a long time ago. We saw it against the Bucks in game one. if you take away the fast break opportunities, I know Indiana couldn't out of three hit a three-pointer to save their lives in game one. I'm aware of that. But the point is, you're looking at the overall fast break points in game one. Indiana won, but it was 12-7. 12 fast break points, you're not going to win those games. Like, Milwaukee should go out of their way to make the game as ugly as possible, put it in the half court, dare Haliburton to even shoot the ball at this point, because apparently he's terrified to shoot. And that's why I think Pat Bev's actually been a valuable piece to this team as an acquisition, because he was great in game one. And defensively, I thought he was very solid. But it just, for me, feels like a spot where Milwaukee has the more talented overall roster. Indiana's inexperience, maybe it's a learning experience. They're going to get killed, but they'll learn from it and move forward. I do think Milwaukee, though, has a game plan, and I think they stick to it. And if Indiana cannot actually run and generate fast break opportunities, I think you'd agree with me. Their half-court offense really isn't that good.
It's not, and that's why we saw this team, that they were very efficient when they got up and down the floor, and I think that's what the one adjustment I want to see if they get up and down the floor here tonight, because, again, what got you success in the regular season, I know the game slows down in the playoffs here, but at least for Indiana, you got to come out and play at a faster pace and make this Milwaukee Bucks team get up and down the floor with you, because when they're running and gunning like they have been throughout the regular season, that's what's really translated to success for this Indiana Pacers team. So at a point, it will probably have to slow down, but I just don't think that this Pacers team has enough to keep up with the scoring-wise for Milwaukee, and I trust Milwaukee a whole hell of a lot more defensively ever since Doc Rivers took over, because early in the season, if we remember, Milwaukee was one of the worst teams defensively, and until they brought in Doc Rivers, that significantly improved for them. But I'm on the under here as well, but I'll be curious to see how Indiana Pacers start this game, if they are going to be getting up and down the floor or not. Any player props in this game you'd like?
For player props, I'm curious if I think Siakam's actually going to play well in this game. I'm not totally sure. I'll go back to Bobby Portis, though. I don't mind his points and rebounds. I just think he's a bad matchup for Indiana. I forgot what he had in the first game. He had 17-11, I think.
15-11.
It's 15-11. I know his rebounds were 10.5, maybe just the rebounds, but I think Portis's energy is going to always be a problem for Indiana to deal with, and I do think that Portis can have a big game. He fouled out, though, so he only played 31 minutes. So I think with that being the case, Portis might be in line for another good game. I'm curious what the Pacers do with Dame, because they double-teamed in the entire second half. He scored 0 points. Mm-hmm. Indiana did outscore Milwaukee in the second half, but Milwaukee was up 30, so that really doesn't mean anything. Do I want Dame under points and just assume Indiana keeps trapping all the time? Maybe. I don't mind Dame assists in this game. I think that's a decent pivot. Maybe a Dame double-double at a decent price. I want to quickly see what that price is. But if you're going to go based on what worked in game one and you're going to try to run it back in game two, I think Dame over assist makes sense, because Indiana might be going out of their way to trap as quickly as possible in this game. So looking at Dame's overall double-double, it's around plus 340. Mm-hmm. I like that quite a bit. I think Indiana's going to stick with what worked in game one, because not much worked in game one. Give me Dame assists over 6.5 and maybe 10 plus.
All right. I think that if they're going to double Damian Lillard or
trap or whatever you want to call it,
trap or throw different looks at him, I think that you probably want to pivot to Middleton. His points are at 19.5. The shot volume would be there for him as well. I think you're probably right about Bobby Portis. I think that may be the pivot off of Damian Lillard, but his assists right now are at 6.5 for Dame, right around minus 118 on the over. But other than that, I really didn't have many player props in this game. But yeah, if you want to look at Middleton rebounds and assists, I don't hate that. He did have combined 14 in the first game. Bobby Portis, again, like you mentioned, 31 minutes, but did foul out. Would expect him, if it's not a blowout, to play in the realm of 35 minutes, like most of the other starters did as well. And again, grabbing a couple more rebounds. Him and Middleton were plus 23 and plus 25 respectively in game one. So expect those two guys to be out there for significant minutes as well. All right, Scott, last game on the schedule. Let's get over to the Dallas Mavericks. They are in LA to take on the Clippers. Mavs are a minus 2-point favorite for game two with a total of 216.5. Looking at the injury report for both of these teams, for the Dallas Mavericks, everybody's healthy. For the LA Clippers, Kawhi Leonard has been upgraded to questionable here tonight for the LA Clippers. I don't anticipate him playing just because the Clippers won game one. They lost game two. It might be a different story here. But game one wasn't a great shooting night, to say the least, for this Dallas Mavericks team. They scored a whole 8 points in that second quarter. That cannot happen again. But give a lot of credit to the Clippers for the way they came out. I don't think a lot of people were betting on this team, especially without Kawhi Leonard. But James Harden had an incredible game, 28 points. Was efficient from the floor as well. 8 of 17, at least for James Harden standards. 6 of 11 from three-point land. Paul George chipped in with 22. Zubac was absolutely amazing as well. 20 points, 15 rebounds in that spot. But for the Dallas Mavericks, it's going to be which role player can step up for this Dallas Mavericks team, because it's something similar to the New York Knicks, where Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey are doing everything and nobody's really stepping up outside of those two guys. Similarly for the Dallas Mavericks, at least in game one, Luka and Kyrie combined for 64 of the 97. You did have PJ Washington 11 points, but after that, it was just a bunch of guys that maybe hit a three-pointer here and there, but that was pretty much it. But Dallas looking to even up the series before heading back to Texas. What are you thinking about this game here, Scott?
Yeah, I think I'm going to lean Dallas in this one. I don't think that Kawhi is going to play. Props to the Clippers. They did a phenomenal job in game one, especially defensively. They gave up 8 points and a quarter. 30 points and a half, which is absolutely nuts. Harden was incredible. Paul George really didn't do anything. He didn't need to. But it was really Harden. It was great. And Zubac gave him a phenomenal game. Zubac was really good on the inside. Dallas' supporting cast kind of sucks. The more you watch the Mavericks play, you're relying on like Hardaway Jr. and Kleber's playing a bunch of minutes, and Kleber sucks. I'll go on record with that. Kleber's a terrible basketball player. But you're just looking at all the guys that Dallas has, and you don't really like many of the options, which is a dangerous proposition when you pick them to make a deep playoff run. I'm also guilty of that. I thought they would potentially make a deep playoff run. And based on what I saw in game one of the OKC series, I think whoever wins this series is going to the Western Conference Finals. So I'll say that publicly. But I just think Dallas could not have played any worse. Dallas played the worst game they could have possibly played. I'm not going to overreact to the stats. I'm not box score watching. I thought Luka sucked. I don't care what the stats said at the end. It was a bunch of garbage time. Luka was really bad for the majority of that game.
Yeah.
Kyrie didn't do much either. I'm going to lean Dallas. I just think that they're too talented to play that badly two straight games. I think defensively, Dallas can make some adjustments as well. The Clippers really played a perfect game. And you can argue that that might be the standard, or maybe they just got everything going their way for 48 minutes. I'm expecting some regression. I'm going to lean Dallas. I think it's warranted that Dallas is favored in this game. They were favored in game one. They got killed. I'm expecting a great sense of urgency from the Mavericks in this game. But it's mostly, how the hell do you play that badly again? I can't toss out game one because, of course, it matters in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. But I kind of have to toss out game one because Dallas couldn't have shot for an entire quarter.
Yeah.
Or an entire half, basically. I'm kind of tossing it out. I just don't think Dallas can be that bad two straight games, which might be a flawed logic for me to use, but I have to at least mention that. I don't want one really bad game, a 0 out of 10 game, to completely just warp my mind on what this Dallas team is. I still think this Dallas team's good.
Yeah.
I'll lean Dallas to respond well and to get the job done in game two.
Yeah. I think I'm on Dallas here as well, minus the two. It's the fact that I'm looking at the box score from game one. Offensively, I'm not expecting anything from Derek Jones Jr. and Daniel Gafford. Gafford maybe catches a couple lobs here from Kyrie or Luka, but it's the guys coming
Gafford
off the bench.
Gafford was a terrible shoot. Forgot to mention, yeah, he was awful game one.
Yeah. And for Luka, if you're watching this game, I mean, there was multiple opportunities where he was driving to the basket. He had layups available. At least he could have drew some contact and got to the free throw line, but he was just dishing out to the corner for 3-point shots. And either it was a turnover or they turned into a contested 3-point shot for the Dallas Mavericks team. And it showed up in the box score. I mean, they were 10 of 33 from 3-point land, only 30%. I think Tim Hardaway Jr. was dealing either with an illness or an injury. And he only ended up playing 16 minutes in that game. But I want to see more out of him. Obviously, a guy that was in the conversation for Sixth Man of the Year. He was only 2 of 5 from the floor, 1 of 2 from 3-point land. So hopefully he gets more minutes here tonight. He's a little bit more effective shooting the basketball for this Mavericks team. Dante Exum was really good for them during the regular season. Also only played 16 minutes. I want to see, he can provide that spark for you all coming off of the bench as well. And then I do expect Josh Green to get more minutes, because when he did come into the game, he was a burst of defensive energy for them in the 9 minutes that he did play. So those are the couple guys, at least outside of Kyrie and Luka, I'll be looking at in this game too here. I mean, for the Clippers, they had that great first quarter, and that it was really that the second quarter that was pretty much the difference. And that was a lot of stat padding in the second half, where the Dallas Mavericks outscored the Clippers 67-53. But at that point, the game was out of hand. I mean, there were spots.
I toss out second half numbers if a team's down by like 30. It just doesn't matter at that point. Yeah. The Clippers are just trying to run the clock out.
Yeah, so again, we'll see what kind of star Dallas gets out to here tonight. It has to be a whole hell of a lot better than what they had at 30 points in the first half. So I do expect Luke to play a lot better here tonight. I'm looking for supporting cast to at least tie the series up, heading back to Dallas for at least 1-1. And maybe at that point, they do get Kawhi Leonard back. In the case that Kawhi does play here tonight, I really like the Dallas Mavericks even more at that point. I think people would be rushing to bet the Clippers because Kawhi comes back, but let's not forget Kawhi's missed what now 9-10 straight games. And when you get a star player like that back, it really kind of affects the offensive flow, because you're trying to get him involved, and getting away what worked for you in that first game. So I think that if Kawhi does come back, I would like the Dallas Mavericks even more, as crazy as that may sound here, but I'm all over the Dallas Mavericks here tonight, nonetheless, if it's with or without Kawhi Leonard for the LA Clippers here. Total is at 216.5 here. Scott, any thoughts on the total?
I still want to lean under. I just think the pace is not going to be there, and the under has done very well in the playoffs so far. Dallas is potentially going to look a lot sharper offensively. They might look better defensively, though. That might be the balancing act, but I think I'm going to lean under in this game. It just feels like the Clippers and the Mavericks are going to just have another war. Maybe it was based on what we saw in game two with the Lakers and with the Knicks yesterday. Maybe there's a greater sense of urgency. Maybe you just see both teams go at it physically, refs swallow their whistles a bit, but I'm going to lean under. Playoff Dallas plays pretty slow, historically speaking, because Luka always wants to operate in the half court, and these teams are a lot more conscious getting back defensively. Because they're not going to give up any fast break points, and I do think Dallas is going to be forced to play in the half court. So with that being the case, I expect a lot of really long possessions, a lot of deep in the shot clock situations where Harden and Luka have to create under 5 seconds on the shot clock. I like the under. I just think the pace is not going to be there.
Yeah, I think I'm on the under here as well. I mean, you mentioned it, that it'll turn into half court offense. I don't really see the Mavericks playing with a whole heck of a lot of pace. I think it does get over that you see both these teams had an incredible night shooting from beyond the arc. And I think that will probably be the difference here if it gets over under the total here. But as far as pace, and we know both these teams don't really like getting up and down the floor, maybe compared to some of the other teams that are in the playoffs here. But I'm there with you on the under in this game here as well. Player props, what are you looking at?
So I think Luke is going to bounce back. I know his numbers were good in the end, so people are going to say, what are you talking about? I mean, in meaningful basketball, I think Luke is going to play better. I don't care about the stat padding at the end. I like Luka rebounds a lot. That was probably going to be my favorite prop going into the series, or maybe Luka points. Both went over in game one. His rebounds were at 9.5 again. Just give it to me. Dallas is not a great rebounding team. Gafford was a non-factor in game one. He had 13 rebounds in game one. So I do think that Luka is going to play a lot of minutes. He's had at least 10 rebounds in 15 of his last 20 games. So then that's going to be tempting. So I like Luka rebounds as my main prop in this game. I'm assuming you co-signed that.
Yeah, Luka triple doubles at plus 265. We know the points and rebounds are going to be there. It's just the fact, is he going to be able to get enough assists? He had 6 assists in the first game. I want to see what the potential assists would have been, but the minutes are going to be there. We know that he played 42 in the first game for the Dallas Mavericks. So I think that's some pretty good value there for a guy, for Luka, who can walk into any gym and get a triple double.
He had a lot of potential in game one.
There you go.
Which is not great for Luka.
Yeah. And again, I think he just played really bad, like we talked about. I think, again, he bounces back here tonight for sure. Zubac rebounds. He had 15 in the first game. But anyway, we talked a lot about taking centers against the Dallas Mavericks, at least their rebounding prop, because they, I know they have Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively, but those guys can always get into foul trouble. And I think that Daniel Gafford defensively, I don't think he's very, very good. He only played 14 minutes that first game for the Dallas Mavericks. But so, yeah, Zubat, if you want to take his rebounds, I don't hate that. Harden assist is always worth a look as well. He did have 8 assists in that first game. I'm curious to see what that number is right now. Harden assists at 8.5. But yeah, Zubac would be the one for me. And Luka triple-double, I think, is a worth the bet there as well. Anything else for this gamer, Scott?
I personally just am not a big Tim Hardaway Jr. guy, but there's going to be one game in the series where Hardaway Jr. just has like 15 points.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. I don't know which game it's going to be. Maybe it's a home game because role
players tend to play better at home. Game back. Yeah, game
it three. Might be. I'm not a fan of Tim Hardaway Jr. at all. He was terrible in game one, but I can't bet his unders because at some point he's going to have a good game. It's just going to happen. His volume's too, his volume is overall just too large. Who do I want to fade in this game? Is it Paul George, who just said nothing in game one? I think Harden might be in full, I don't want to say ball hog mode, but he was phenomenal in game one. I think Paul George is going to defer again. So I don't mind Paul George unders in this game.
Typically, what I've seen Harden have a good game, he'll usually have a bad game the next.
But the point
night
is, he's going to keep forcing stuff because he got whatever he wanted in game one.
Yeah. All right. Let's get over to our lock and prop for this Tuesday night NBA playoff schedule here. Scott, you want to lead us off?
Yeah. For my lock, give me Milwaukee. I just think at the end of the day, Indiana's not talented enough. They can push the pace. Maybe they'll get hot from three. I think that's the real story. They need to get hot from three. But just watching this team in the half court, damn, this team sucks in the half court. And I think Milwaukee's got more experience, obviously. I think they're the deeper overall roster. I just don't see much from Indiana's team that I actually like. Haliburton was a phenomenal rising star, basically a guaranteed all-NBA player for the first couple months of the season. Now he's probably going to miss every NBA team because he was, or all NBA team, because he's been awful for the last couple months, and he only took 7 shots in game one. Siakam was great. Nobody else did anything. Miles Turner had 17 points on 17 shots, and I mentioned before, Ben Shepherd played a bunch of minutes. Toppin didn't do anything. McDermott's on the roster barely. I just think their supporting cast isn't very good, and I think Milwaukee at home is a really good team. So give me Milwaukee money line -115 as my lock. For my prop, what do I want to go with in this one? I mean, Luka rebounds is pretty appealing. I think that's I think he's in line for a good game on the boards again. I think that's what I'm going to do. The Phoenix-Minnesota game, I did lean to Phoenix, but there wasn't really much in that game I truly like. I just think that's a game I'm going to watch and observe, try to hope that Ant and KD start yelling at each other just for the fun of it. I'm hoping that's going to be a fun game. I don't see much of an actual value betting-wise in that game for me personally. The Milwaukee game with props, I mentioned a couple. Dame assists I like, but I'm not going to double down on that. But I do think 6.5 assists for Dame is a bit low. For props, though, give me Luka rebounds. He had 13 in game one. Jason Kidd proved in game one, no matter how much they're down by, Luka's going to play 35 minutes, give or take, if not 40. They just 40. Threw him out there down 30 and said, oh, yeah, just do your thing. So I think that is overall playing time's a guarantee in the spot, even if they're getting killed. Luka, though, at 13 rebounds. Dallas is not a great rebounding team. Gafford had a hard time with Zubac. So, yeah, give me Luka over 9.5 rebounds at around minus one. What is that? Minus 115, I think. I see minus 110. Give me Luka over 9.5 rebounds at minus 110 is my prop.
All right. For my lock, I'll go with the Dallas Mavericks here tonight on the money line. Minus 125 is what I see currently over at DraftKings. Again, definitely shop around for the best number. I think, again, this is a bounce-back spot here for the Dallas Mavericks here tonight. Expect them to come out playing a whole heck of a lot better than they did in the first half of Game 1. I do see a minus 112 right now over on FanDuel for their money line. The line is down to minus 1, so even better for me. Maybe, I don't think that's indicating Kawhi plays here tonight because they'll be a favorite at this point, but I think Dallas just has a great game here tonight. They bounce back. I mean, you can't score 30 points in the first half in a playoff game and expect to win. So I do expect them to come out strong, play better in that first half. led by Luka, led by Kyrie. And I would be looking at the supporting cast, whether it is Tim Hardaway Jr. tonight or whether it's Josh Green coming off the bench. Someone to knock down 3-point shots for this
My
game.
My sleeper choice is Derrick Jones Jr.
Okay. Yeah, whether it's him, whether it's Maxi Kleba's one game in a series that he actually knocks down some shots. I mean, we'll see. But
that's your fight to fight. I'm out. I've had enough of Kleba. I'm good on
But I think that Dallas does bounce back here tonight. So -112 on the money line right now is what I see currently over on FanDuel. For my prop, I think it's that Yusuf Nurkic prop I really did like. That was at plus odds as well. His defensive stats, the steals and blocks to go over 2.5 currently over on on DraftKings. Steals and blocks, Yusuf Nurkic over 2.5 at +140. Game one, 3 blocks, 2 steals in that game, and then dating back to the regular season as well, the final 2 games of the head-to-head matchup against the Minnesota Timberwolves, 3 steals, 1 block, 5 steals, 1 block. So I do expect him to be out there for 25 to 30 minutes unless he does get into foul trouble, but I think that defensively and rebounding-wise, Yusuf Nurkic has been really good this season for this Phoenix Suns team. So especially at plus odds, I'll take that to the bank when he's done in 3 straight games against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So Yusuf Nurkic over 2.5 steals and blocks at +140, currently over on DraftKings. All right, Scott, let's do our underdog fantasy intrigue here for tonight. Again, underdogfantasy.com. Make sure you guys use that promo code NBASGPN. You'll get a first deposit match of up to $100. And again, like I mentioned, they're making it really interesting and fun for the NBA playoffs. It's Underdog Fantasy. So again, if you don't have an account, get signed up. Make sure you use that promo code NBASGPN. All right, Scott, where do we want to start here for tonight? You want to start with Luka props?
I kind of just want to run back the plays we just gave out for our props. Okay. Luka, I like a lot for the rebounds, and you mentioned Nurkic. That might be spicy, but I'll probably play that myself. +140 is a phenomenal price.
Yeah. Let me see. Let's load here.
By the way, to go back even further on Nurkic, he's gone over this number in, I believe it's 8 of the last 10 games in general, not even just against Minnesota. Or 7 of the last 10, I mean. So he's been great.
Yeah, I don't see it for Nurkic just yet. They only have rebounds and assists, rebounds and PRA for him. But let me find.
It's 8 of the last 11, by the way, for Nurkic. He's gone over. So that's kind of an insane deal. +140 for a guy that's done this in 8 of the last 11 games.
Yeah. Where is Luka? Luka. Let me just search for it.
Can we just jump ahead and take Dinwiddie under 0.5 in game 3?
You said rebounds for Luka.
Should be at 9.5.
Yeah, 9.5. We'll go higher on that. You want to go Dame assist?
Sure. That should be at 6.5.
Yeah, that's at 6.5. And then let's throw in one more.
Do you think it's a Booker bounce back game? Do you think that it's a Portis rebound? I mean, I don't know. Portis double-double is probably extremely juiced at that point.
Let's see.
Do you want to go with Halliburton lower? Do you think Halliburton actually shoots the ball for once? What's your thoughts on Indiana?
So, double-double for probably Portis is at -120-ish.
That's actually not bad at all.
Yeah, it's at 0.8.
That's not bad.
You want to take that?
Yeah. I think you'd agree that he should be in line for a good game.
Yeah, especially he played, 30-some-odd minutes? I mean, he got fouled out, and he still
31 minutes, and he had, 15 and 11, so yeah.
Yeah, all right. So this comes out to Luka, higher 9.5 rebounds, Damian Lillard, higher 6.5 assists, then Bobby Portis, higher double-double. It's at 0.8, but that $10 entry will get you a return of $48, courtesy of underdogfantasy.com. Again, make sure you use that promo code NBASGPN. Come join us. Come cash in with us. If you already have an account, get your family members involved. Get your friends involved, coworkers, anybody of the legal age of 18 years or older and in a state where Underdog Fantasy does operate. All right. That's pretty much going to wrap it up here for this edition of the NBA Gambling Podcast. Scott, anything else you want to mention before we get out of here?
Not really. I know I'm probably going to bring in a decent amount of, I'd say, comments in the comment section about my Jokic comment before. I stand by it. I'm not going to flip. I think Joker is one of the best players to ever play the game. And I'm not going to suddenly pivot. I understand that I might be insulting your favorite player. I get it. But just for fun, by the way, just because I can, just to actually mention the last 27 playoff games for Joker. So going back to the Golden State series where he was by himself and they lost in five. These are stats in 27 playoff games. 30.1 points, 13.6 rebounds, 8.7 assists, 1.2 steals, 0.9 blocks, 55.8% shooting from the floor, 42.6% from three. He's one of the greatest playoff players of all time.
I'm just going to leave it at this.
Just going to say Olajuwon, that.
Hakeem Olajuwon would put him in a blender. I'll just leave it at that.
I know Joker's defense could use some work, and I'm not going to insult Hakeem. I think Hakeem's an all-time. Somehow he's underrated. I don't know how Hakeem's underrated, but he's somehow underrated. But it's watching Joker play, guy's a future top 10 player of all time easily. It's not even
discussed. Hakeem hasn't gotten the finals appearances, I don't think, enough.
He's two rings.
Yeah, he has two rings, but Jokic looks like he's
against him when Jordan retired. Like, that's supposed to be Hakeem's problem. Like, what did he do? Oh, yeah, when Jordan wasn't there. What the hell do you want from him? Like, the rings don't matter because he wasn't there? Like, what?
I mean, somebody's got to win at that point. Golly. Yeah. All right, that's going to wrap it up here. Make sure you guys follow Scott on Twitter at Rice Show Radio. You can follow me there as well at SportsNerd824. Follow the NBA Gambling Podcast Twitter account at SGPNNBA. More importantly, just smash that like button for us before you guys get out of here. And if you haven't already subscribed to the NBA Gambling Podcast YouTube channel, please go ahead and do so. Leave us a comment if you watch this live, what you think about Scott and Jokic, and if you think there's somebody better than him.
Call me Nitty in the comments section. I'll take it. I've been known to be an extreme Joker fan on the pod. I'll die on that hill, man. There's not many players that I've seen that I enjoy watching more play basketball than Joker. It's really just phenomenal to witness. I'll put it that way.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Join us then. Recap what we saw on Tuesday night and get into the two-game schedule on Wednesday. So till then, good luck with your bets. Let's break these books off and let it ride. Basketball, give me the ball because I'm going